Hey everyone, welcome to another Tower Babel interlude. I'm here with Dan.
Hello.
And as always, I'm Julie Mush. And we recorded a super long episode the other day on Saturday. And posted it on Saturday too. And that was fun, catching up on all the news that we missed over the holidays and that during E3 and all that kind of stuff. But we didn't get a chance to talk about all the stuff that we've seen. And I wanted to do that, but I didn't want to put it all in one episode because that would have been a bit much, I think. So we're back today. We're going to talk about Glow, which is one of the newest Netflix series with starring Alison Brie. We're going to talk about the end of American Gods. I'm going to briefly mention Handmaid's Tale, the finale. I've beaten Horizon Zero Dawn. I've watched Transformers. I've also seen Spider-Man. Daniel hasn't seen Spider-Man yet.
Yeah, we'll have to save that one.
I'll just briefly mention it and then not go too deep into it, obviously. And then I'm hoping to see Baby Driver sometime this week as well. All right.
And so Planet of the Apes comes out this week, too.
Oh, yeah, man. So many good movies. And everyone's saying that Planet of the Apes is, like, supposed to be one of the best movies of the summer. And the commercials are super cool for them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Apes together. Strong! Strong! So where should we start, Dan? Glow? Start with Glow?
Sure, let's get that.
It's the newest one, so we'll work backwards. Technically, Spider-Man's the newest one, but you haven't seen it yet. So we'll work backwards chronologically from Glow, not including Spider-Man. So Glow, again, newest Netflix series. And Alison Brie, obviously, we know from Community. What else is Alison Brie in that we've liked?
She was in Mad Men, too.
Right, I've never actually seen Mad Men, but she's like a secretary or something, or one of like the...
No, she's a wife. Oh, actually, okay. Interestingly, this isn't really spoilers for Glow because it happened. You'd find out in episode one, but the dude, like her friend's husband.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she's married to him in Mad Men.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Huh. That's cool. It's a little tidbit there. Okay.
It's been a while since I've watched Mad Men, but...
That guy did look familiar. Again, he's in other stuff, obviously, but... Okay, so I'm just looking at the IMDb here. Obviously, Alison Brie, she tops the top billing, but you could say she there's no really star. She takes a backseat a lot of times during the show. Okay.
She's for sure the star, but her co-star, I guess, Betty Gilpin, I think that's her name.
Yep.
Does an amazing job. Also, I don't know if she's typecast or not, but she's playing a very similar role to that which she plays in American Gods.
It's true.
Especially at the beginning. That's just, I remember thinking, like, that's for sure why she got the part. It has to be.
she's just the angry friend.
She's been cheated on. She's betrayed and she's angry. She's really good at selling that.
Yeah, well. She's, for the rest of her life, she'll just be known as the, as that now. Okay, so I mean... And the rest of the cast is really good. Mike Maron is amazing.
Mark Maron, yeah.
Oh, my God. He's so good. Man, okay, so here's the thing. Here's what I loved about this show. And I've been thinking about this ever since I watched it. I binged it all in one night. Super bingeable, the way that they do these, not even cliffhangers, but just hard cuts on seemingly an important part. A little bugs me that they don't pick up necessarily, like, right where they left off in some parts when they do that. But otherwise... Super bingeable. I think the best part of the show is it's super honest. It just exists in the world that is this ridiculous place of 80s female wrestling, right? And the jokes are all organic to the world. This isn't like a traditional comedy. It's more of a dramedy, really. But it gets serious at points. But the jokes are wholly organic. Right, the jokes, the things that are funny are sometimes can be dark humor, but also it's just like the ridiculousness of the situation. Right, it doesn't really play up like, oh look at we're in the 80s. Look at how weird. Look at how funky things were in the 80s. Right, it doesn't really do that. I mean,
it all feels real world.
Yeah. It does a little bit with the robot and stuff with the drugs, but it doesn't like lean into that. Right. It just says, okay, this is the ridiculous world of female wrestling, and the humorous things are going to be, again, organic to that environment, which in itself is kind of ridiculous, right?
Yeah. What do I think you think? Is it based on a true story?
Yeah, it is. There's a documentary on GLOW on Netflix that I want to watch.
Yeah, it's my recommended viewing now.
Yeah, right? But like, I almost don't want to watch it because I don't want to know how it ends. Like, obviously, this is like, it's been changed from, it's not like a this isn't a one-for-one retelling.
Well, sure, yeah. It's loosely based.
Yeah. But, I mean, I imagine like the character names are pretty simple, like Liberty Bell and, what's her name? Something the Destroyer?
Zoya the Destroyer. Zoya
the Destroyer, right. Right. Man, there's a scene in that, what episode is that? I don't know. They all blends together, but where she goes with the hotel manager to like a Jewish.
The Bris.
Yeah, the Bris. And it's like, that is legitimately hilarious stuff. Like some of the funniest TV I've seen in a while. But it's just, and it's, the thing is, it's like, it's that uncomfortable, like office style.
Very uncomfortable.
But, and I normally hate that, but I really liked it in that scene. But again, are we spoiling? I mean, there's not really much to like, quote unquote, spoil. But like,
I don't even know if it's a show that people are going to be upset about being spoiled. You know what I mean?
Like, there's only 10 episodes and only half hour each, right? Like,
yeah,
you could watch the whole thing. It's like watching a movie. I guess I don't know. We shouldn't reveal any major plot points, right? Episode one, we can talk about things that set up the story, like you said, with Betty Gilpin being cheated on, and you know, that kind of stuff. That's all episode one stuff, right? Like, that's just set up. And then all that kind of stuff pays off later. But, man, I just can't get over how, like, Marc Maron is so good in this show. Like, the mustache is great, right? Like, just like this, like, exploitation cinema guy trying to do his, like, one for you, one for me thing. And then just his, first of all, being fucked up all the time. Like, just always on drugs. Super 80s.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And then just not giving a fuck about anything. Like, nope, all right, you're out of here, done, see you later.
I think that's what people really, really relate to Marc Maron's humor. Like, he's just very, like, I don't know, down to earth is not the right word, but dry. It's just like a, like, go fuck yourself attitude, yeah. You know? Like, stop thinking you're special, you're not special.
No patience, right?
Yeah.
But what else is great about the show? Like, basically everything. Is there anything we don't like about GLOW?
No, I think it all works. Some of the supporting characters are kind of boring, like the old biddies I didn't really care for,
yeah,
right?
But
whatever, they're just they're essentially a prop.
I forgot that they existed until like for a long time until they came back. Like, and that's the thing. I guess some of the supporting characters aren't really fleshed out, right? Like, we find out that they're like hairdressers, right? That all their clients think they're hilarious, so that they should get into, which is, by the way, hilarious, is so funny because I'm sure that's like a real thing that happens in Hollywood all the time. People tell me I'm really funny, you know? So, and then I was like, okay, I thought they like didn't make it. And then I see them like three episodes later and they're like, and I'm like, they're bad. I'm like, how, what? It's not a, that's it's such a minor nitpick though. You're right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, obviously and this isn't like even a gripe, but like the way that they deal with like the whole like race thing is uncomfortable, but it's like it's of the time, right? So you can kind of be like, I guess that's kind of what they did back then, right? Like,
yeah.
particularly like the Muslim lady who's like practicing, who's a med student, right?
And she's Indian, not Arab. Yeah,
yeah,
that's pretty.
Right, and then there's
it's uncomfortable in this day and age, and it's, I don't know, it's kind of been a thing for a while,
right? But it's like they really play it. It's just worse then, right? And then you have like the black couple who, man, that when they fight the KKK, holy I was dying. I was actually dying. Yeah. I loved Alison Brie in the show because it's not that she has like is the heart of it, because as much as she is to some degree, you almost sympathize more with Betty's character, Debbie, than you do with Ruth. With Ruth, it's like this almost like you look at her and it's just like you just feel sorry for her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she plays that really well. Like, she
And she also demonstrates a lot of range in the show. She's, you know, she's not just a comedic actress. She's a dramatic actress as well.
Yeah.
And I can, but yeah, she's the main character, but she's not the hero necessarily. Like, she's a flawed main character, right? Yeah. And which is why she makes a perfect heel. That's the term they use in wrestling, right?
I also like learning about all those wrestling stuff. It makes me think about like wrestling that we watched in when we were kids in a different light.
Yeah.
You know?
Monday Night Raw.
Right. So who was the face of Raw? Was it The Rock at that time?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right. That's a good point. Was that
The Rock was like a bad guy for a while.
Really?
Until he became everybody's favorite. Right. Then he's the good guy.
Like John Cena, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
And like, so the best example of that, I would say, and he's like a career man, is Triple H is always the heel. He's always the bad guy, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like, he's been there forever. You know that's his choice. He just does it well, you know?
He's also pretty cool, though, right?
Yeah. I
mean, I'm just thinking about like, the thing where he like sprays the water, it's like super lame. It's the most lame, like
but it looks really cool.
You know, but back to what I was saying about Alison Brie is that I just think that watching her struggle her dream is to be an actress, right? Like that's what she just wants it so bad, right? But she's just not that good at it, and. Watching that struggle is it hurts, you know, to watch. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, you kind of get when Mark Maron's character, actually, what's his name in the show? Sam. When Sam kind of brings her back down to earth, like, you're not very good at this. Like, you know, she's the Rudy of the show, right? Like, Rudy's not that good at football. But you root for
her. But he's all heart.
Yeah, he's all heart. She's got the heart, but she doesn't have the talent, which is kind of sad, right?
Yeah.
It's such a great dynamic between her and Betty Gilpin, right? It's just like, it's this friends, frenemies thing, betrayed. You know, Alison Brie's supposed to be the quote-unquote star of the show, but she does this thing that's like super terrible right at the bat. You can't really endorse it, right? You can't be like, well, mm-hmm. whatever. It's like, it's such a shitty thing to do, right? And then you also see Alison Brie's perspective of like resenting her friend, right? For the success she got.
Being successful.
Yeah. Anyway, we can move on, I think, from Glow. Unless you have any other thoughts.
No, that's, I mean, it's a fun show. It's girl power, you know?
I've been trying to use
it doesn't do it in an exploitative way, even though they're in very skimpy clothing. It doesn't feel like they're doing it.
Although, at the same time, those leotards are super, like, they're not the most flattering.
Hey, man, it was the 80s.
There's a scene where she joins, like, the exercise class, and I was like, looks like, what is happening? did people actually wear these clothes? And, like, that's kind of where they play up the 80s thing a bit, right? But yeah, people did wear those gloves. Also, I guess one more shout out to the producer on the show. Not the actual producer of Glow, but he's also the producer of Glow. It's very confusing, but Chris Lowell plays Bash, is just super endearing, right? You can't, like, he's like, oh, he's just like a spoiled rich kid, but then you kind of like him too.
Yeah, he's like a little puppy dog.
Yeah, he just wants to do what's best, you know. So yeah, okay, let's move on from that. Let's talk about American Gods. So American Gods wrapped up, and we have another Betty Gilpin joint. And the thing with American Gods that kind of bugged me about this season is that not a lot happened in these eight episodes. And the main character of our show, you know, the guy that we're introduced to right off the bat in Shadow Moon is basically takes a back seat for like the back half of the season. He basically doesn't do anything.
I can see how that's like, he really didn't have an arc either, you know?
Well, his arc is technically I think they're supposed to be, is gone from non-believer to believer.
Right? Yeah. At the very end,
but there's no payoff to that. right?
But I think it's already been approved for next season, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to be 10 episodes. It's probably, I know this sounds like a cop-out, but you kind of look at this as like a, not a prequel, but just a prelude. Mm. You know, this is everything building up to something, right?
To the war between the new gods and the old gods, right?
Yes.
We've talked about the show before in the past, but I think it's really smart, the show, just generally, the way that they sew in these ancient gods, sometimes we know who they are, sometimes we don't, into like the fabric of modern day America, right? I think the way that they do that is really clever. We all knew that it was going to be, that Ian McShane was going to be Odin, right? But the reveal is still pretty cool, right?
I don't know if everybody knew. I think that's why they had to do that, is they had to kind of explicitly say, yeah, this is Odin, you know?
That's true. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's funny that most of my Norse mythology comes from Marvel.
Yeah.
But even then, I still knew that most of the Odin stuff is still, you know, it still runs true, right? Like, still, his day is Wednesday. And when from the first episode, I knew that, right? Or I had a pretty strong inclination, right? I didn't know the thing about the ravens and the wolves and stuff. Although he goes through all that when when he does his reveal.
Yeah, and he lists like all his names too. It's nuts. Right.
The Our Father.
All Father, Grimnir, Glad of War. There's a million of them.
Well, anyway, so that, I thought the reveal was cool. I also like Astero. Is Astero? Am I thinking of Arrested Development?
Astara, I think they named her.
Is that, I don't think it,
Easter is who you're talking about?
Yeah, Easter. She's Astera. Yeah, Astera. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Astero, Astera. Because I was thinking about that. I was like, Astera. I was like, what does that sound familiar? Austerity measures, right? That comes from that, right? That whole thing, right? I'm not crazy. That makes sense, right?
I think you might be crazy.
No. Okay. What's the term for the history of a word? Entomology?
Yeah. Etymology. I don't know. I just assumed that Austera was what the pagans called Easter before it became Easter. Right?
Well, yeah, that's true. I also like the idea that she's like, when they're talking to the new gods, you're like, hey, St. Nick took this deal, and look how that turned out for him, right?
Yeah. What's interesting about that whole sequence is those characters weren't part of the book. Like, Gaiman came in and created that whole Jesus and Austera party.
Really?
You know what I mean?
Oh, that wasn't a part of the book?
That was not a part of the book. Jesus wasn't a character in the book. They referenced him, I believe, but he was never in the story.
Okay, here's a question. I didn't think I'd ever ask you this, but what was your favorite Jesus?
My favorite Jesus. We only really got to meet the one.
Yeah, I liked Mexican Jesus a lot.
Mexican Jesus? Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was out from that party. He got killed. Maybe he dies and comes back to life. It's unclear, but Mexican Jesus was my favorite, I think. You'd think that there's like a whole bunch of other Jesuses that weren't at the party, likely, right?
Yeah, there's got to be millions of them.
Mm-hmm. What did you think? So we have the girlfriend, right? What's her name?
Emily Laura
Browning. Laura.
Yeah.
Her whole thing is trying to get back, you know, get back to Shadow, and basically come back to life, right? They go to Austera, and she can't do it because she's dead from a different, you know, different kind of way, because a god killed her, basically, right?
Yeah.
So what does that mean? She's like, there is a way, right? But then how, I mean, maybe you know the answer to this. I don't know. Have you read from reading the book? Is there any, do you know the answer?
Well, like, yeah, I don't really want to give anything away, but.
Okay, never mind. I didn't.
You just have to kind of.
I hate that. I hate it.
I know.
Let's just talk about how much we love Pablo Schreiber's Matt Sweeney. Then he was amazing.
Oh yeah,
he's just so much probably, fun as a character.
Like the standout character of the show, him and Wednesday.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because again, as much as Ricky Whittle is good as Shadow Moon, he's more of like a cipher, you know, kind of audience surrogate. He doesn't really do very much. And he doesn't really...
He's just always, like, he's always there questioning. He's always there, like, basically saying, like, what the fuck is this?
I'm sure you could do, like, a supercut of him going, like, what? Or what? Yeah. You know, like...
Yeah.
And that would be pretty funny. But, like, my two standout characters, you know, actually, Wednesday being less of... is being Emily and Pablo. So, Laura and Matt Sweeney. Right.
It's so weird. I talk to a lot of people, and so many people love Laura, and I just can't. I don't like her at all.
You don't like her snarky attitude, or
no, I don't.
Or you don't like the fact that she would cheat on.
Well, there's that. Like, so you start out the series hating her for being that kind of person, right?
Yeah, I know. That's true. I mean, obviously you get her perspective, I guess, in that one episode. Not that it explains it or gives it, you know. But I think that does a lot to endear you to her.
Yeah.
And also, I guess it's that same reason that I like Mike Maron in the last, like, this, the you know, the
Why not do you special. Keep saying Mike?
Did I say Mike again? Mm-hmm. Mark Maron. That it's like, don't give a fuck, you know, attitude that is just, you know, kind of, you know, that you wish you could have on a regular, like, in a day-to-day basis with regular people, but you can't because you have to be, you know, polite.
I mean, you do and you don't. If you did, you'd have no friends. Like,
right?
Especially the way that Laura is, right? But no, whatever. It's fun. It's entertaining television for sure.
I think it might be that she spends her screen partner is Matt Sweeney, and he's such a, like, an amazing screen presence that she might, like, piggyback off that for some reason somehow.
It's also, like, I remember with a lot, like, in the middle, like, towards the end of the season, a lot of the decisions that she's making, it's also, it's like you said, she has no regard for Sweeney. But in terms of, like, the larger story, you were concerned with, you know, the old gods versus the new, and inherently we're on the side of the old gods just based on how the show is shot, right?
Right.
And it seems like she's fucking that up, too, just because all she cares about is herself. She's very selfish, right?
Well, what does she do that helps the new gods?
At the end of the day, she gets her, like, I think I get the impression that Wednesday wants to keep her as far away from Shadow as he can, right?
Right, but I mean, I guess at the same time, it depends on who you're rooting for. If you're rooting for Laura, to who is saying all the right things, that she's kind of you know, seen the error of her ways, you know, dying will do that to you, I guess, and then you know, and wants to wants redemption, right? And
sure.
To do that, you know, you see her, you literally see through her eyes, like, Shadow is a glowing pillar of light in her world, yeah. Right? I mean, the metaphor is pretty, it's like on the nose a little bit there, right?
But, like, sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're rooting for Laura, then, you know, you're okay with that, I think, because even at the same time that you might be behind the old gods and what they want to do, you kind of understand that whatever Mr. Wednesday is doing is kind of, he's not giving you the full truth, and we don't really know what his full motivations are.
Yeah.
So even though you're like, yeah, it would be nice to see them win because that's how the show's set up, right? I'm okay with seeing Laura subvert that if it helps her story move along or helps her get closer to her goals. No, right?
I get what you mean, and that's how the show builds tension, right? Because clearly Wednesday has gone out of his way to, like he, I believe he says it in one episode that he had to get Shadow to a point where he'd lost everything so that he was able to believe in this other world, right? So the show's building tension by bringing her together. Like, she could mess that up for Wednesday or for Shadow. Right,
but at the same time, I don't really buy that. I mean, I buy it as that being, like, the impetus of it. But at the same time, it's like, I don't understand Mr. Wednesday's. I mean, maybe I don't know enough about what's going to happen. But, like, it's clear that he now believes having Laura back. I don't think he's going to go like, oh, well, now that my girlfriend's come back from the dead, obviously all this is bullshit.
You know, no,
like,
no, but but Shadow doesn't know that Wednesday had Laura killed, right?
Right, that would change
that Wednesday things. Set all these events in motion.
Yeah, that would change things. And does Laura now know that? I think I remember. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. She like, held Sweeney up by his balls and made him tell her.
Right, that's right. Okay. And why is Sweeney working for Mr. Wednesday again? Remind me that
he owed him a favor.
Okay. Fair enough. And he's not, he's like a demigod. Is that what we're, like a, he's a leprechaun. We know that.
But he's a leprechaun.
What does that mean? Is for, he's not a full god. We don't, they don't really get into the
hierarchy is kind of hard to figure out, but it, but again, it's about what people, like their power comes from belief.
Right. Okay.
Right. So that whole, that vignette episode where Sweeney like went back in time and showed that one lady coming to America and still believing in leprechauns and leaving food out for him. Mm-hmm. It's people like that, that give him power.
He didn't go back in time.
That the was, show no, did, not he.
Okay, he has like his flashback. Like, you can time travel? But there's just so, the thing is, like, I just wish there was more answers given at the end of the season. So much is left unanswered. Like,
yeah, I know. I was kind of just, I assumed it was a 10 episode run. I didn't really look into it at all. And then, too bad.
It's like, it's one thing to set up all this and then leave things for next season. Like, obviously, right? Like, you need to drive the show forward and bring people back. I get it. But you got to give me something. Give me something, right?
Yeah.
And they don't really.
Maybe their plan was, obviously, the declaration of war, that's a huge cliffhanger, right? Mm-hmm. That's fine. And I think in terms of the something that you're looking for, it must have been the Wednesday reveal. I'm sure not everybody pieced that together.
Right, I guess. I mean, so, if that's a... It's hard. I guess. I don't know. Maybe. If that's the big reveal, right? And I already knew that, you know, then that's maybe it's disappointing for me. Because I think that's exactly what it is, right? Because they literally end on that, right? Mm-hmm. And like that's like, oh man, he's Odin. How cool. Like it's cool to hear him say it. That's certainly true. But I kind of wanted, okay, you know what it is? I think I know what it is. It's Laura again. It's the whole idea of we set this whole season in motion of her, you know, chasing after Shadow, right? And then to not get any resolution to that, you know, only to get so close and then not give us anything, you know, as far as, you know, she says, what does he say at the end? I don't know. She basically, the season ends with her. But
she probably just says, like, hey, puppy. Like,
right, or something like that, yeah. But, like, that's it, right? And that's super disappointing, you know. And just a, you know, a little bit of a letdown. Anything else?
Do we know when the next season's airing? It's probably a year, right?
I don't think there's a date for it yet.
Yeah.
Because I let's see here, season two. Let's see, there's a date on IMDb. I'm guessing there's no date yet.
Well, either way, between now and then, I'm going to reread that book. Yes. I lent it to my mom, and I don't think she's reading it, so I'm going to take it back.
Yeah, it's 2018. That's all it says.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so anything else you want to say on American Gods before
we... It's one of these shows, there's three that come to mind when I think about this, it's very unique in terms of what we have for TV right now, very visually unique, mm-hmm. right? It's that, it's Legion, and Master of None.
Legion and Master of None. Have you seen Legion now?
Yeah, I watched all of Legion recently.
Oh, okay. Well, we can talk about that then, I guess. I mean,
by the way, spoilers, no spoilers. I loved Legion. It was amazing.
I don't think that's considered a spoiler, Dana. I don't think you know how spoilers work.
No, it's a spoiler for later on in the podcast because we're not going to talk about it now. We're going to talk about it.
Oh, I see. It's a tease. It's a tease. I see what you're
doing. Yeah, yeah.
I think you might be right as far as this new era of television that's like, not even fair to call it an era. Some of these shows that we have right now that I don't know how they're doing as far as numbers, but from a artistic standpoint, are just blowing the doors off of things we haven't seen, stuff we haven't seen for a long time at least. And that's pretty awesome because we don't have Fargo's probably up there as well. Although, Dan,
I haven't actually watched Fargo.
But it does some pretty awesome stuff. It's the same guy who does Legion, so...
Yeah.
All right. What else do we have? Okay. I guess we can talk about. I guess we can talk about Legion now.
Sure. Yeah.
We're in the TV stuff. And it's been a while. Obviously, Legion came out and finished, you know, months ago. So this will be. I've basically said my piece on Legion. I think it's super smart. Really, it does this really good job of balancing genre, like an eeriness. It does give answers, which I like, you know, unlike you know, it's short, which I've been liking these 8-episode seasons. It gives enough, reveals stuff, and if you have further knowledge, like X-Men knowledge, there's a little bit extra there for you, you know? I think of specifically that one, there's that one episode where he's talking to himself, his British.
Yeah, the chalkboard. Yeah.
On the chalkboard. That's really cool. I think that the lady who plays his friend,
Audrey Plaza,
is amazing. Like, deserves like an Emmy for that. Like, it's an Emmy winning performance, I think.
Oh yeah.
I just think the whole package is really well done. You know, acting is phenomenal. It's all about the style of the show. You know,
that's what it is exactly. Yeah.
From the music to the way it's cut, like some of the shots are just like so. The way that they're cut in between each other, the way the transitions are sometimes is so different than you see on a standard run of the mill show. Mm-hmm. That it's just like you're like, oh man.
I think that's what I mean when I say unique, like American Gods, yeah, as well, because their style is that they are creative and they can play around a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. They're trying new things, and the nature of this show, because it's so deeply psychological, means you leave it that much more room for creativity. Yeah, right.
There's that episode where there's no sound, and you know, like, they're just
that's what I was about to say. It's like a silent movie. Yeah. They have that chalkboard thing, like they're all over the place, but it all still fits and makes, yeah, sense within the world. They're not just doing it for the sake of it, you know.
Can I just say that my favorite character on the show is Jermaine Clement as Oliver Bird. Love every aspect.
He's pretty cool.
Every time he's on screen is great. That the only disappointing thing I thought about this season was that when at the very end, like for spoilers, at the very end of the thing, he doesn't join the team in a traditional sense, which is unfortunate because, yeah, I think he has such an awesome screen presence. It is nice that we'll see him again next season.
That's what I was like. He's going to be next season's arc, right? Yeah,
so that's nice, at least. But I just love his like trapped out man out of time, just like kind of losing his mind a little bit, drinking a lot,
losing his mind, but fully aware that he's losing his mind, you know,
right? Like he forgets words for like simple things. I love it. And like his style, the whole thing, everything about this show is just so well done. I can't wait for more of it.
Yeah. And I was surprised at how like it was genuinely scary too at certain points. And it's a rarity for a TV show to be able to have that effect on me, but like it was creepy as fuck.
Right. There's certain moments you're like, "What the hell is this?" Right? And like I think later in the later on in the series when the demon with the yellow eyes, you start seeing him more like fully formed. He starts to lose his scare a little bit. But once you find out that Lenny's behind the whole thing, it's even trippier because she starts turning all really, man, that last 3 episodes are just insane, right? Like basically the moment that they're stuck in time, it's basically time has stopped, right? And it's all happening inside of whose head is it?
A moment.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Like, you can't even just, it's hard to even describe the show because
it's very hard to describe. And it definitely, like, it makes you think. You have to wrap your head around it and, you know, fold it a couple times.
And at the same time, you kind of almost want to let it, like, wash over you and be like, I don't want to think about this too much. Like, I don't want to try to, like, figure out what every possible thing is. I just want to let this all happen and enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm. Because if you try to think about it too much, it's just going to drive you nuts.
No. And then after the show, it's like then you have to try to piece it all back together. Like, okay, how did that get there? And why were they doing this? Like,
That first episode, by the way, is really good. I think the way, like, the setup is there. I think it from a genre perspective, it's cool because the show is very different after that. That first episode is much more traditional, as far as a show like Legion can be. But then you also get to see X-Men, like, well, quote unquote mutants, I guess, not X-Men. Like using their abilities and their powers at the end, which is fun. And I do like who's like the quote unquote villain. He's not really a villain, but I like him a lot. I'm trying to think of his name now.
Like the federal agent guy?
Yeah, the federal agent guy.
I don't remember. He's from Newsroom.
Yeah, and that's where I remember him from. What's his name in the show? Doesn't say. I mean, it does say, but I can't find it in here. I thought he was fun, too. Well, anything else on Legion before we move on to the next thing?
No, I'll make sure I won't be so late to the game next season.
Yeah, seriously. I guess I'll say that we just talked about a show that I wrote a piece on the Tower of Babel blog that talked about my three standout shows from the first half of the year. And one of them is Legion. One of them is Handmaid's Tale, which also wrapped up around the same time. And the other one is American Gods. So we've talked about two of three, and I'm going to touch on the third one. So I'll check that out. I'll go to towerbabel.ca/blog, if I were you, and read that. I mean, you got a lot of what we're going over now, but and there's one also show to avoid on there. Spoilers, it's Iron Fist. So let's move on. I guess I'll just quickly mention, I've talked about Handmaid's Tale. I'm not going to get into it because you haven't seen it, but they did wrap up the season, and I think they did a really good job of setting up next season, of paying off the arcs of the first season. This is another show, Dan, I think that you should get your hands on. I mean, you have Amazon Instant.
I know. It's
for you.
A click away.
So you really should get it. You should really get on that. And yeah, so what else? We can move to movies, I guess.
I'd mention one other TV show is Master of None. The second season, maybe a month ago, it premiered on Netflix. I won't get into it either, but it's another one, like I said, unique shows, visually, whatever. They do this weird thing where each episode is essentially like a little vignette. It's like Master of None presents and then the episode title. Mm. So they're all over the place. And obviously, Dev is still the main character, whatever. But they do some really creative things. Like, for example, one episode is from the perspective of a deaf girl. And it's silent. The entire episode is just silent. She's using ASL. There's subtitles. And that's it. Mm. So it's cool. They're taking risks in that sense. But I just think it's a really down-to-earth, sort of modern relationship show that's very honest, but not in a preachy... It's not like...
Yeah, it's just showing us what life is for modern...
The dating world's changed. It's not like it used to be. It's not calling it down at all. It's just like, this is how things are. These are people dealing with these issues, and it's still fun and enjoyable to watch, and you can relate to it.
Yeah. I mean, I've only ever heard good things about it. I've seen some of the first season.
That's it? I'm sure you'd like it.
I think I saw the first three episodes. And I did like it. I just haven't got back to it. With all these other stuff that's coming. And then the back half of the year is going to be full of Game of Thrones and other stuff, right? So,
fair enough.
Let's talk about a movie or two. I'm going to just touch on this really quick. Transformers The Last Knight, not very good movie.
I don't know why you would go to see that.
I told you that my choices were between that and The Mummy, and I had to see a movie. So,
and I had to.
So I had to choose between that and Transformers. And Transformers was newer, or had released more recently, so I gave that one the shot. And I mean, I'm not feel like I wasted my money, at all, because, I certainly got 3 hours of Transformers stuff. But I just feel like the series has just completely lost its way since the first movie, basically. The first movie's good, so ever since the second film. And the third one's not bad. But I think Michael Bay has lost touch with reality. he doesn't know how real people are or what they look like or how they... Because everyone is super, super attractive, all the time, right? We have this... There's always one super hot chick, right?
At
least one. And this one is... She's a British... professor of history, and they even make a joke about her wearing quote-unquote a stripper dress at some point. It's so crass. The whole thing is just so surface level. Everything is just the most obvious joke you can think of. That's the one they're gonna tell.
It
does this thing where they just, it seemingly just jumps between plot point to plot point with no very little connective thread, if not sometimes none at all. Like, you know, one thing's happening and all of a sudden something else is happening, another thing's happening, and then it's like, what, how do you even track this? Like, characters just make choices seemingly because that's what's written on the script, you know.
I mean, Transformers was never exactly subtle to begin with.
No, I know, but that, I feel like that first movie really did set the stage for what could have been a really interesting series. That first movie is really good. I mean, it's not it's not like the best movie ever by any means, but I think for a movie about robots in disguise, I think it does a really good job of telling a concise story. It's got a heart about, you know, this the story about a boy in his car, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it's funny. The action, like, it's at that time, you'd never seen CGI that looked like, you believed that Optimus Prime was a real, like, thing, creature.
Sure, yeah.
You know, the characters had style, you know, were, like, I still remember Ironhide and Jazz, and but I couldn't name half the characters in this movie. You know, obviously Optimus is here, Bumblebee's here. I think Sideswipe is one, but it's like they don't really get, they don't really get anything more than that. Like, Grimlock, the dinosaur T Rex guy is there, but again, it's just like none of them are fleshed out as characters, you know, and even the human characters aren't really fleshed out. There's no depth to anything.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those series, like, to use the terminology, like, it jumped the shark a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Movie. Yeah. And so it's just been ridiculous ever since. Like, it might as well, like, it has obviously a, you know, much bigger budget and better production value, but it might as well be a Sharknado movie.
It makes less money every time now, too. They make less money every time. So, but they're doing all these, spinoffs, man. There's going to be a Bumblebee spinoff. I have hopes that that movie might actually be okay.
Sure. Like, I don't, like, who wants something to be unsuccessful, but, like, I'm at this point, I've said this to friends before, like, every time I see a trailer for Transformers or Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm like, it's like white noise, you know, like, I have no emotion, like, not one piece of me is excited about that.
You know, it's funny, because I'm going to talk about Spider-Man next, and I happened to see an episode of the animated series, like, a couple nights ago, the 90s animated series Spider-Man. And it's the Secret Wars. I watched the three, it's a three-parter. And they always did, like, the three-part episodes and stuff like that. But this was the one where, like, he's teaming up with Iron Man and Captain America and the Fantastic Four. And that three-part episode is as close to a Transformers movie as you're going to get from a Spider-Man property. Because that show, and I don't know if you remember this, Dan, that show moved at a mile a minute. There was no pause for anything. It was just like a Transformers movie. Plot just moved. Just it would just go, go, go. And, like, people would just say it with, like, you know, it wasn't the writing wasn't always the best. And
of course not.
It's
yeah.
just like, I was like, slow down. Like, you're just like, and then the Beyonders here. Okay. And then Red Skull. And then, like, let's throw in the Fantastic Four, and it's clobbering time, and then it's like what is happening? Slow down. And that's kind of how I felt about Transformers as well. At the same time, though, I got to see a much better team up movie in Spider-Man Homecoming last night. I watched Spider-Man Homecoming, and man, I tweeted about I just wrote it was one super quick tweet at Tower Babblecast on Twitter. Just the energy of this movie is just so infectious. It's so just a high energy movie. It's so positive. This is the best Spider-Man movie that we've ever got, bar none, hands down. It's not even close
really?
In my mind.
No, come on. That's quite a statement.
It's not even close.
Spider-Man 2.
It's better than Spider-Man 2.
All right. We'll have to see.
It's much better than, I mean, well, okay. Now I'm getting a little excited. It's at least as good as Spider-Man 2, if and I think better. Okay,
all right.
I think it handles the character better. It deals with the thing that's supposed to make Peter Parker endearing, which is the fact that he's just a high school kid, right? And the balance between life as a teenager and the responsibilities of a superhero, and it does that so well. He's a kid, you know. He's a kid. It's not like they're driving it home, like beating you over the head with it, but it just but through the actions of Peter in this movie, you just get it. He's like, he's the most relatable superhero, and he's always been the most relatable superhero.
Yeah.
But that's not always come through on screen, and it does in this movie. It's just so good. And Iron Man plays a role in this film, and yeah, it's actually a little bit smaller of a part than they kind of sold the movie on. But I think it's the perfectly right amount. There's teases to Spider-Man characters that are kind of set up in this movie that are probably going to come back later, and all that kind of stuff. Like the main villain of this movie is Vulture, and oh my god, man, he's also amazing. So you have the lead
really
in Tom Holland is really, really strong, right? But the Vulture, man, is so...
Keaton.
Michael Keaton is just so relatable. Like, talk about relatable. Every character in this movie is just... except for maybe Tony Stark, is relatable, you know? I think... I can't speak highly enough about this movie. I might just go... I don't watch movies twice or in theaters very often. I know, like, a lot of people, and especially in the entertainment industry, go to see movies 2-3 times. I don't do that very often because I'm always... I always kind of want something new.
That's a lot of money too.
That too, right? And they can go for free to a lot of stuff, and it's just fair. But I'm thinking I might see this movie again. It's just so much fun. Yeah. It's almost, and there's I know there's things I must have missed. But they also don't also, if I can say also three times, they don't spend a lot of time with world building, right? We know Spider-Man. The MCU's been around for a long time. Iron Man. We're familiar with Iron Man and his deal and what he does. Right, but they just let Spider-Man exist in that world, and they don't waste time or spend time setting up the next movie. And you know, there is teases, like I said, to other characters, like Scorpion is teased. But I missed it the first time. I was like reading some stuff, and I was like, "Wait, Scorpion was in this movie? Yeah, he is." And I didn't even realize it because I don't remember Scorpion's real name.
It's Mac Gargan or something like that.
Something like that. There's other characters in this movie that you wouldn't have expected, you know, because you're like, oh, it's the Vulture movie. They're not going to do whoever, but they're in there and it's really cool. No Oscorp stuff though. I'll just say that there's not one Oscorp tease. There's no Harry Osborn. He doesn't swing past a Oscorp building, you know?
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No. But there's that, to me, you know, and maybe purely because of that 90s show, that Oscorp, and even the last movies, Oscorp played such a huge role.
I'm sure they'll be there in some capacity eventually, but...
I mean, I can't wait for the next movie. Like, it's gonna kick off Phase 4 of the MCU, and it's going to be different. Things are going to be... there's going to be a whole different status quo at that point, and they're going to do a character we haven't seen before. Which is cool. At the same time, I'd be totally okay if they did the Lizard again, or they did Doc Ock again, or tried to actually do Venom properly, or whatever. Not that we're going to get Venom with the whole other thing, but you know what I mean. I just can't speak highly enough about this movie. It's really, really good.
Awesome. I'll see it probably, you know, tomorrow or something.
And it's really funny, too. Like, you know, obviously, Spider-Man's known for his quips. There's some good quips in this. I was upset because you know that the line in the trailer where he's like, "You're not the real Avengers." Hulk gives it away, you know, that moment.
Yeah.
That exact line isn't in the movie. They kind of play it differently. That scene is obviously in the movie, but they play that line differently. And it's like, I kind of like the trailer version of that better because I thought that encapsulated what I thought the perfect Spider-Man quip kind of stuff is. So that was good. But like the rest of the movie is so funny. Like there's just, it's not just Spider-Man, but like there's nonstop humor all the time. And this is not a comedy. It again feels organic. It's really good.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so that's Spider-Man. Or Spider-Man, as someone might say. And any movies you've seen? I've talked about Spider-Man and Transformers. I really want to see
Baby Driver. No, I haven't been to theater in a bit.
I really want to see Baby Driver. I've heard so many good things about it. People are saying it's Edgar Wright's best movie. What's your favorite Edgar Wright movie? Is it Hot Fuzz?
I don't know. Yeah, well, I like Hot Fuzz a lot, actually, yeah.
It might be Scott Pilgrim for me, I think.
No.
No?
No, you're wrong.
I don't like Hot Fuzz, though, so.
Well, you're wrong about that, too,
then. What's the other one? Like, The End of the World, or...
World's End? World's
End. I didn't like that movie.
You didn't like that movie?
I didn't like it. It was weird. I mean, I know that Edgar Wright's movies are weird, but it was... It didn't click with me. Maybe it's the British stuff. I don't know. You know? I like the one time he did the American movie. right. So, and that's last thing is Horizon Zero Dawn. This is a game that came out in the first half of the year, early in the year, like a week, a couple days before, a week before Zelda. And I haven't played Zelda yet because I haven't got my hands on a Switch, but I plan to. This is a game that's been in the shadow of Zelda, so I can't really speak to the Zelda side of it, but I can say that now, having beat the game's main story and only a couple trophies away from a platinum, that I think this is a really, really strong start to what I think can be a very interesting series. The mythology of the game, I think, is very interesting, and it's told to you in an interesting way. I think the main character is strong. It's a strong female lead character in the same vein as like a Lara Croft, but, you know, different, obviously, right? I think she might be gay. It's not clear. They don't touch on it. Like, it's not like it's beaten over the head with you, but I think that might be how it is. And I thought I liked the subtlety of that as well. There's no relationship stuff in this game. I also like that. It's about the exploring. It's about the combat. And the combat of this game is different than the combat of most games. You're not going to see stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Dan, I understand that you didn't get super, super far. I don't know how many weapons you...
I don't know. I don't know whereabouts I'm at, but...
I mean, how many weapons...
It got to the point that I was bored with it.
Is your full weapon wheel full?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So there's a variety of weapons, and I found that as I started using different types of weapons in combat instead of just concentrating on the bow, that it was a lot more satisfying, that you felt more empowered. Because the one thing I did like about this game, and I played it on hard, is that you always felt vulnerable to some degree to these mechanical dinosaurs and the variety of things. Like, there's a mechanical saber-toothed tiger and all that kind of stuff, whatever. But you always felt vulnerable. Like, these machines could always kill you. If you make a mistake, they can kill you. And if there's a lot of them, they can overwhelm you with numbers, right? So the strategy involved can sometimes come into, like, it becomes very important. Obviously, there is certain aspects where it can be annoying. Because it seems like there's machines everywhere, and you're like, I just want to get to point A to point B, and it's like you're constantly avoiding them when you don't want to get into a contact, but they're everywhere, and that can be annoying.
Yeah.
But overall, I just think that once you kind of start playing around with the different types of weapons that you have at your disposal, that it can become so much more satisfying, because at one point you say, like, so the Thunderjaw, which is their T-Rex, right?
Yeah.
I avoided the Thunderjaw as long as I possibly could. The first time I fought one was when I was forced to fight one, in a story element. And after that, I was like, okay, well, I feel a little bit more comfortable with it, but they're still so, like, heavily powered. But there's ways of doing it. And once you get good at it, you feel so, like I said, empowered to take down these massive machines, right? And exploiting their weaknesses and, like, using your Batman detective vision to figure out what specific spots on the machine to concentrate on first, where to go from there. I feel like your ability, like the roll ability, feels good. Like when you need to dodge something, if when you get hit, it's usually, it's very often it's because you made a mistake, and it's not because the game got janky or you know it didn't respond when you wanted it to. And it looks really good. Like, the game is obviously gorgeous. Like, there's sort
of, no, I'll definitely grant you that it looks good.
I think, Dan, you've given this game a short shrift. I think you need to give it another shot. I really do.
I don't know. I understand that using different weapons. I actually do like the strategy of aiming at different parts to take out, like, this gun or to cause this type of damage. I get that. Again, though, the gameplay got very repetitive very quickly for me, even using things like traps, a little grenade launcher, whatever. The AI seems pretty dumb when you're trying to be stealthy. All you have to do is dive into any bush and you're automatically disappeared. Little things like that take you out of the game.
That quite clear cut, right? Like,
pretty much.
If you're in the middle of a combat scenario, it's hard to, they know you're there, right?
You just have to go behind a wall.
It's not quite that simple.
Pretty much. I'm exaggerating slightly. I don't know. It's just like, I always find with games, it's like little things in the mechanics like that are what take me out of it. The melee combat is terrible in this game. I'm sure you would agree with that.
I mean, I don't use it very often. It's true. There's a certain skill you get like really, really late in the game that kind of makes it a little bit more, a little bit better.
I'm saying like the melee is too easy. If you're attacking humans, for example, they're basically one hit kills. And I was playing on hard as well.
Yeah, I mean that's true. So you know? If you're in stealth, you can use stealth kills, and that's true. What do you want this?
I'm not talking about stealth. I'm talking about when they're attacking you, like melee. You just hit R2 and you can kill them. That heavy attack. It got so boring. And in terms of balancing, I found these are, I guess, I can see how this is nitpicky, but in terms of balancing, the smaller robots, you get to the point where they're just one hit kill, easy with an arrow, whatever. But then some of the larger ones, you have to, like, you're sticking and moving. You have to hit it like a good like 40 times in order to hurt it, you know? Mm-hmm. There was no in between. So it feels like as you're gaining new skills, you're OP on one end of the spectrum, and then you're still underpowered on the other. You know,
and I think that Dan, I thought that was true too. I think for a little while, but it's actually not. The thing is, it becomes the exploiting of weaknesses becomes more important with the larger machines.
Yeah.
So you're right with the smaller ones, like the Watchers, for instance. Although if there's like four of them, they're still super annoying, right? Annoying in like a combat sense, not like they're like ugh, you know, like not this again. But you can take down, for instance, a bellowback, which is like their like fire breathing or ice breathing.
Yeah.
One, pretty quick if you know what you're doing properly, right?
And you've sure. Yeah, you destroy its sack, whatever, and it blows up in fire on itself. Yeah.
So, I just think you need to give the game a bit. I get what you're saying, right? It's can be repetitive, but I mean, at the end of the day, most games are pretty repetitive. If you want to boil it down, you know, like what's a, you know,
of course.
Battlefield is just shooting stuff all the time. Like that's, you know, that's nothing. Every game's the same, you know? So I never really liked that critique just because everything it comes down to is like that. It's like, there's what game.
Well, I think that in itself is an oversimplification.
Well, I know, but I don't think this game has that much of a problem in that as you might think.
Exploring, sure, it looks beautiful. Yes, there's some really cool environments, some unique environments. I enjoyed that part of it. It's been a while since I played it, but I remember at the time thinking the writing was really chunky as well. I didn't like it. It
actually gets better. I also thought that the voice acting.
See, but this is what everyone keeps saying to me, is like, don't worry, it gets better. It gets better. But if a game is that shitty for that long, it's not worth it.
How long is that long? You played for a couple
hours. I don't know how many hours I put in.
And the thing is, like, because it's an open world, what you're experiencing, you know, I went back. I skipped over a whole bunch of stuff that was in the first part of the game because I was like, I want to see what's happening. Like, the story was driving me, so I wanted to see more story elements. And then I would go and do a couple side quests to try to, you know, build up my skills and then go do some more. So I went back and played it. I'm like, yeah, some of that early dialogue, especially with the Nora, which are the tribe that you come from, can be a bit rough. But I think later in the game, it gets better. I mean, it still can be a little bit cheesy at times, but I think overall it gets much better. It's just much more engaging.
All right.
Like the characters you're more engaging. You kind of understand your goals. Like at first you're just kind of like wandering, and then you kind of understand the stakes and what you're trying to do, and that drove me especially. I just had a blast playing this game. So I take a break for like a good month and a half before I got back into it, but I'm glad I did.
All right.
I think you're making a mistake. And they just added a free patch that added a new game plus and an ultra hard difficulty. So that's kind of cool. The thing is though, they added those trophies to the trophy list, but I hadn't platinumed yet, so I hope that I don't have to finish a new game plus and beat it on ultra hard to get the platinum, because that wasn't what it was like a week ago. we'll see, because I'm only a couple things away. I would mention that the ending of the game is a little bit of a letdown. I would have liked there to be a little bit more of a prologue, or sorry, epilogue, kind of touching on some of the, like, you do is this really important thing, and they set up this other thing that it's like, okay, that's really, that'll probably be important as well, but then they don't touch on it at the very end of the game. It becomes more of a personal thing, and I was more invested in the world, less of the personal side. So I would have liked to see more of that, but that's not a huge thing. Because I think the way that they handle the finale is actually pretty fun. I think that is everything. Is there anything you've been playing or watching that we haven't talked about?
Nothing like that, no.
Okay, well then at this point...
I think we touched on it all.
We have literally covered everything. So, next episode we record will be the Game of Thrones Season 7, Episode 1, Tower Babel Breakdown. It's a mouthful. So that's exciting. So if you haven't checked out that stuff before, we do record a Game of Thrones podcast during the Game of Thrones season, recapping, speculating, all that kind of fun stuff. It's a lot of fun, and we've started a GoFundMe for that this year, for this season. So go over to GoFundMe.com/GOTSeason7. So it's the number 7. So GOT season and the number 7. GoFundMe, to lend us a couple bucks to help us, reach our goal, $1,000 Canadian, which isn't too much. It's only like $820 US, to do the bonus episode at the end of this year, as well as improve some of our equipment and pay for some of all the time that we spend, all that kind of stuff. If you think that what we do is worth it, so we appreciate that in advance. And the other thing is, if we're doing house cleaning stuff, is episode 100 for the Tower Babel podcast is very soon. It's coming up, as in we just recorded episode 99, and I posted that on Saturday. So we don't know what we're doing for episode 100 yet. I feel like we should do something different, at least. Maybe not like massively huge. Obviously, we don't have the resources for that, but I would like to do something different, and I don't know what yet. I'm working on it. All right.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
But I'm not sure what. So if you guys have any suggestions,
yeah, open to suggestions.
Send us, like, help us out here. TowerBabelPodcast@gmail.com is the place to send those, or tweet at me at TowerBabelcast, or send us a message on Facebook, facebook.com/TowerBabelcast. Basically, go to our website, towerbabel.ca, and check out what we do in there. Always love that. But then please send us any suggestions you might have for episode 100, because I'm at a loss, especially because we're not all in the same place right now. That makes it a little bit tougher. What I'm trying to say is it's all up in the air at this point. But we hope to get it all sorted out by the next one. I can always make time by just – we can just do another Tower Babel epilogue or interlude. To draw out that 100th episode a little bit longer if we need. But I don't want to do that if we don't have to. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, either way, we'll see you guys next week with our first Game of Thrones Tower Babel breakdown. So we'll see you then.
Take it easy.
Hey everyone, and welcome to a Tower of Babel bonus episode. It's not really a bonus episode. We have a name for these, right? An interlude.
You've been calling it interludes. Let's start over. Yeah.
Hey everyone.